Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Aha! Yep, absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring. There's a new chat in town.
I have the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey tennis?
Little piss, my foot on the spine.
With a chuckle.
Oh.
Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Okay.
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey tennis?
Edmunds is a total wazzock of a guy.
Yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
Well, this is great banter.
Yeah.
Monkey tennis?
Back of the net.
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Hello everyone and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we'll now be tackling From the Oast House Series 3, or Series 2 Tranche 2, depending on who you speak to. I'm Adam Brooks and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
He was a big wide king.
Nick Alder.
Clarkson is laser guided. You don't want to get in his crosshairs.
And Tom Stab.
Suffolk is on the lookout for a new car laureate because Quinton Wilson doesn't want to do it anymore because his wife doesn't want him to do it anymore.
So a couple of choice quotes from these episodes that we'll be covering. Just to cover off a bit of housekeeping, we're going to be tackling two episodes of Oast House per episode of Monkey Tennis. So today we'll be looking at episodes 1 and 2. Before we get into that, a couple of major bits of Partridge news. One some good news, one very much not good news. Firstly, you might wonder why we've not referenced these in previous episodes. It's actually because the news dropped the day after we recorded the last episode of Monkey Tennis. But I'm sure many of you are already aware we've sadly lost Steve Brown, perhaps better known to listeners of this podcast as Glenn Ponder, who was a famous, infamous comedy composer who, as well as Partridge, lent his talents to projects as disparate as Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Planes, Trains and Automobiles, as well as obviously appearing on screen as Glenn Ponder in Know Me, Knowing You. So, yeah, a sad loss there. In happier news, there is a new Partridge project on the horizon. I'm sure all of you are well aware of And Did Those Feet with Alan Partridge, which is due to air later this year on BBC One. Anybody want to chip in with their thoughts and info around this?
Well, I wouldn't say what I thought was hilarious. We obviously sealed the fate of that announcement by recording an episode where I said, oh, well, you know, that project isn't coming along anytime soon, so we'll get to cover Saxondale shortly. But poor old Saxondale, probably yet to get a look in 2024 at this rate, because that'll be three projects this year.
I think not even 24 hours had passed since you said that before they dropped the news of this series coming. So it's six half hours, isn't it? It's documentary style, and it's largely Alan covering various cultural and historical topics, having failed to ingratiate himself back into Norwich life after a spell working in Saudi Arabia. We know it's coming this year. My guess is it's probably going to be autumn, and we'll obviously be covering it in due course. But give us a chance. We've got Oasthouse, we've got Big Beacon, and now we've got Under Those Feet. It's a veritable work backlog for us at Monkey Tennis.
And I don't know how many of our listeners have seen the promo picture that was put out with the news of Under These Feet. And an eagle-eyed follower on Twitter pointed out that on Alan's suitcase outside the airport, on his little travel bag, was a tag that said Jed on it. Producer Jed, we can confirm, is not involved in the recording
of this
series.
He's not in the suitcase.
As far as we're aware, he may have been keeping it secret from us. Yeah, that was a nice little nugget for us.
So that's the airport tag for it's Saudi Arabia, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It'll be interesting if this ties in very closely with the Saudi Arabia kind of chapter in Big Beacon, perhaps.
Save it.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, obviously yet to be seen.
I mean, we have to save it because we're...
Yeah. But, you know, yeah, I guess in a way we shouldn't be that surprised. It seems Steve Coogan and the Gibbons brothers now have quite a trait of, they'll have this kind of multi-textual release strategy where there's a book and a series of Oasthouse and a TV show that all happen at broadly the same time and often seem to reference same periods in the AP year as well.
Two quick things about Under Those Feet before we move on. Firstly, if you've got theories or things you think will be addressed or would like to be addressed in this series, then do let us know. Instagram at Monkey Tennis Pod, Twitter at The Partridge Pod, Facebook.com/The Partridge Pod, or ThePartridgePod@gmail.com. The other question I have for this is, does it have enough driving in it to warrant being the series? Finally, the series finally comes out that allows Steve Coogan to get out of a driving ban.
He had to drive, Adam. He had to drive.
So on to From the Oasthouse, episode one. I think it's the shortest episode of the series, entitled
It Is
Jealous. Mr. Tom Dark, I believe you've got the synopsis that Audible gave us for this episode.
So this is the official Audible wording. And I think this episode is officially titled Jealous. And if I remember correctly, I think the weird thing about this is when the episodes first came out on Audible, I think they just had numbers. I don't think they had titles on them at all. Yeah, I think that's right. I'm pretty sure they didn't have episode titles to begin with, because I'm pretty sure when I was making my notes first time round, I was just giving the episodes mock titles.
Mock titles with Martin Coogan.
There we go.
Very
great.
Good. Very good.
I can dig it.
Oh, the comedy happens. It really does. So this is episode one, and it's officially called Jealous. And the official Audible synopsis is, Alan risks being consumed with envy as he faces down a challenger for the affections of his sexy older girlfriend. Ooh, you're sexy.
There we go. So it opens with him referencing the lyrics of Jealous Guy from the, I enjoyed this, the late dead John Lennon. Very much like saying chai tea. It's just two words that mean the same thing. and later covered by Brian Ferry. I did double check that it was the same song, and it is. Brian Ferry did cover this on a sort of Lennon tribute record.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'd never heard this song as well. It's not so good.
You never heard Jealous Guy?
No, I'd heard the title, but I'd actually never really listened to the song.
Right.
Not feeling it either.
I definitely knew of the John Lennon version. I didn't know that there was a cover by Roxy Music that was actually a bigger hit than the original John Lennon one, and it was off the back of this. It was off the back of the Roxy Music cover being successful that they released it properly as a single by John Lennon, and it did quite well. But it's okay.
All ties back into the APU as well, because obviously he interviewed Brian Ferry for Comic Relief some years back,
yes,
which we've covered on another episode. Not to be down on this straight off the bat, but I thought this was quite a sedate start to a series. And I mean, obviously we've had some discussion about whether actually Series 2 and Series 3 of Oast House were all meant to be released as one. Do you think that this tranche was recorded at the same time as the last? Because it did feel like we sort of joined him in the middle of a series rather than it kind of starting with any oomph.
I mean, I would say that it's a slow start. The whole episode is a slow start rather than a slow opening to the episode. The whole episode is a slow start. It's a little bit of a non-starter this episode, isn't it, for the start of the series?
I think that what you get with a lot of these episodes generally is kind of moments in time, and this is just a kind of a moment in time of him essentially just saying things, and there lacks a bit of a sort of narrative arc, although you do get this a little bit in this episode. But I think what this episode gives you and what you see more and more throughout this series is kind of just a rambling monologue essentially before you start to get into the story of the episode. And obviously this episode does have a story once we hear from Katrina, but this kind of opening section is just a bit of a train of thought almost.
Yeah, because I think actually I do think, and you know, this will become more apparent as we get into it, but I think this series overall feels like there is a stronger narrative actually connecting episode to episode. So it's almost like this first episode is just kind of a bit of a regrounding of where's Alan at now, what's going on with his relationship with Katrina, things like that. Because I think, yeah, arguably you could probably have the rest of the series or tranche without this episode and it still all makes sense.
Yeah, to draw a very weird parallel, but hopefully one that long-time listeners of Partridge will, or appreciators of Partridge will appreciate, similar age being to all of us, is with the X-Files, because you often had, they would dot in episodes every now and again that would move the narrative on and would be linked to each other, but there'd also be several kind of Monster of the Week episodes.
Oh, is that the mythology episodes, weren't they called?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So I feel like this...
It's the Monster of the Week.
Yeah, it's
I feel like this series has a similar approach in that there's a couple of episodes you could pick up and drop anywhere, and then there's a few that obviously relate very strongly to a certain gentleman that we'll get onto.
And I do think the last series operated a bit more kind of like Alan goes and does a thing, Alan goes and does another thing, and you could listen to those in kind of any order, and the narrative thrust wasn't really there. So I think that I would say off the bat, and again, it's kind of something which will make more sense when we get to the concluding episodes, but I think that is the marked difference between this series and the previous.
But thank God he's left enough time to consider Henry VIII, who he says pulls a feminine dress through sheer commitment. I like that, rather than it being the style at the time. Just imagining Henry VIII as being a bold dresser. And then also referring to him as being bold in the sense of when he cuts off the heads of women who've, and I quote, crossed a line.
There's some quite good descriptions of Henry VIII. Top half of an American footballer, bottom half of a ballerina. Stands like a peacock, built like a brick shit house, and sums it up by saying he was a big wide king.
Related to this bit about Henry VIII, I don't think we ever discover what Alan is doing driving with four men in the car down the shambles in York. Just a passing reference to some sort of day trip or battle reenactment or something.
Yeah, not clear.
Speaking of which, we had a message from Thomas Wright on Instagram about this. He said to us, "Dear Mike Tennis, I noticed a mistake 48 seconds into Tranche 2 from the Oast House. Alan mentions that he drove down the shambles in York. However, I used to live in York. There is no way this could be possible as it's actually a pedestrianised street. Is this a mistake on the writers, or is Alan simply making things up for entertainment value?" Now, I would think the point of that is it's kind of obnoxious Alan driving down a street that he's not supposed to take his car down, right?
Is it him taking a stand against the pedestrianisation of town and city centres?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I like that it's that, and I think what I like even more that the writers would make a mistake that I think that they would probably kick themselves for, given their kind of pedantry of local road networks in and around regional conurbations. I like the idea that they've made that mistake.
Unless if it could, another argument is deliberately including that as a street that's not possible to drive down for conversations exactly like this.
Well, we may never know.
So we've been around the houses with John Lennon and Henry VIII in the opening couple of minutes of this episode. Before we get to the point, which is that I, Alan Partridge, am a jealous guy. And he then goes on to warn us that you're going to hear something quite personal and painful. He says, if you don't want to listen to something personal and painful, I urge you to listen to Fern Cotton's Happy Place, which I really like because I imagine, is the joke here that he's gone by title alone, having never listened to Fern Cotton's Happy Place? Because it literally is a podcast entirely preoccupied with personal and painful stories of famous people. So he's saying, if you don't want to listen to something personal and painful, go and listen to Fern Cotton's Happy Place, which literally is about that.
I think that's a really good read of it.
Yeah.
And I think there's perhaps a real world Coogan thing where it's maybe having a bit of a dig about perhaps not even liking that style of podcasting. But I think you're right. In the APU, that is a really good reading of it.
Alan's never listened to that. He's just seen Fern Cotton's Happy Place and he thought this is frothy and it's going to be about nothing. Yeah.
I mean, I've got a confession to make. That's exactly what I thought that podcast was, having never listened to it and never will listen to it.
It's also just quite a bit of fun where it's a way for Alan just to really get a dig into a very successful UK podcast as well.
Yeah. There's a bit of a fun reference to there being a time before we had new words for everything, where being a bit fed up is what we used to refer to the way that he has been feeling. And he also warns you that you're going to be hearing some cuckoldry in this episode, which is hardly surprising given what we knew from the last series about his relationship with Katrina.
And that's a summation of what the themes are going to be covered in this episode. It's rejection, sadness, loneliness, cuckoldry, thwarted expectations, life disappointment, and being a bit fed up.
I like the way that Audible have also cottoned onto this and the things that Alan's going to be talking about, and they're worried about him doing something daft. So they've kind of felt the need to step in here as well.
I really love these intersections where he's referring to the broadcaster that the actual show or product is going out on as well. So it's not dissimilar to when he talks about the BBC, you know, as part of this time. He obviously talks about Audible a lot as part of this podcast, more so, I think, in this series than in the first two. And it's not dissimilar to when he joined the BBC and the letter they sent out said he'd spent time in various doldrums and they included Sky Atlantic in that list. These bits where the APU and real life intersect I find really interesting, so I really enjoyed that.
Yeah,
there's a bit of an update of his relationship with Katrina. Does anybody have the examples of how this relationship has now become serious?
Is this because regally sitting in a bath? I think that's the whole
one of them. One of them is regally sitting in a bath.
I think that whole thing is brilliant. Where basically it's that's got a kind of intimacy of sharing a bath. Yet Katrina has her earpods in.
Alan's up against the taps.
His knees to his chest. His knees to his chest and back against the taps.
Yeah, he's been reluctantly granted permission to get into her bath, hasn't he? Basically, that's what's happened.
Were you looking for like the mocking stuff as well? So he mocks the shape of her friends, she mocks his nipples being too low.
Yeah, but he's comfortable with that. And he still locks the toilet door because you need a bit of fucking mystery, Christ.
I mean, would anybody ever use the bathroom without locking the toilet door? You'd be demented.
You'd be demented, especially if you had lots of people staying in your house and you were taking a poo while hungover.
This could be a genuine podcast series in its own right with
a true crime series.
A bit like who shat on the floor at my wedding. It's like who walked into my toilet whilst I was taking a shit.
Adam did.
You left the door unlocked, pal.
It was 5 a.m. I assumed I was safe.
Listeners can read between the lines of what's happened here.
So he describes his relationship.
It's not
going
to be hard to figure out.
Yeah. All right. I mean, we've basically said it. And thereby robbed ourselves of all the proceeds of a lucrative true crime podcast about not being able to lock your own toilet door. So his relationship
whilst,
with Katrina.
Whilst pooing in the nude as well, wasn't it?
Whilst pooing in the nude. Always in the
naked
nude.
Naked as the day he was born. Anyway.
Good reason.
Yeah, I would say in some ways he felt more naked than the day he was born, but let's not get into that whole bag of worms. So Alan and Katrina, he describes the relationship as great talk, great food, good sex. And that was quite nice, the distinction that he can't reliably describe the sex as great, but the food and the talk, fantastic.
Is at this point that he reveals he was going through Katrina's pockets looking for his car keys? I thought,
yeah, I love that little detail.
Doesn't sound very likely, does it? So was there some suspicion going on within the relationship already?
I assume so. And I think the way that it was set up is kind of you're expecting
I found a message, or I found something far more incriminating than what he actually finds, which
I would argue a small Phillips screwdriver.
Completely innocent.
I genuinely couldn't work out what the significance of that was in his mind when I first heard this line. I was like, how is he going to parlay this into it actually being something to worry about? Because he describes it as he discovered in her pocket something you'd never want to find. And then when he says it's a screwdriver, I was like, how is this going to be justified now?
What do you mean by justified?
Well, I mean that like it results that he can't, the reason it's so significant to him is that he can't believe she could or would source one herself rather than have got it from a man.
I assume the sort of the read on it is that, you know, we never get into the abilities or capabilities of her DIY skills, but he's gutted to think that anyone else could fiddle around with her wiring other than him, basically. So when she's had to sort refuge in another man who will come on to, he's crushed.
Yeah, but also just bypassing entirely the idea that she might just have her own screwdriver and do some of her own basic DIY. Like,
I think we don't know much about Katrina, but I think we know that gender stereotype roles are pretty well defined in her mind.
That's fair.
And it's also, you know, Alan's character conforming to that as well. There's no way a woman could own her own screwdriver because she wouldn't know how to do DIY. So, yeah, I think it all draws in the implication, which kind of gets revealed in this episode more about her relationship with the builder, yeah.
There's then a sequence that sort of, this graphic attack that he then goes on to sort of portray. Is this a direct line from a popular show or a film? It seemed like often when you have Alan talking about sort of combat situations, it's something that he's clearly lifted from a specific bit of pop culture, but I didn't recognise this one.
What, the you reap what you sow, or you reap what you show, sunshine?
Yeah. Did anybody else have to re-listen very carefully to what he says very quietly after he says, reap what you show, sunshine?
I missed that completely.
Oh, okay. So he goes through this whole graphic attacker sequence ending in reap what you show, sunshine. And then if you listen very carefully in a very high-pitched voice for quietly, he goes, oh my God, I can do Sean Connery.
Yeah.
yeah. Which I love. Right. I love because, again, there's a really nice Alan Coogan interplay there, that Alan thinks that what he's just done by accident is a passable Sean Connery impersonation, whereas Steve obviously made his name doing actual impersonations, including Sean Connery. And I thought, along with Alan's constant got to try stand-ups, it feels like they're both a bit of a sort of bristle from Steve at people that think being funny and doing impressions is easy, and that anyone that sort of makes the odd bit of wordplay ought to try stand-up.
I also really like that the podcast as a whole are kind of littered with these little tiny audio jokes that you don't always pick up on. Yeah. So like, I didn't even hear that. Tom Stab didn't even hear that. So half of us didn't even hear it. And I kind of like they drop these things in that you kind of have to really be paying attention to kind of get the little nuance of some of these jokes and kind of the jokes within jokes, which is definitely one of the best things, I think, about this podcast series as a whole.
So after the discovery of the screwdriver, does anybody have the next smoking gun bit of evidence that Alan has involving our favourite local venue?
Yeah, Ronald has seen Katrina with another man at the Boxley Wee Sheaf. It's damn evidence. Yep.
Not only that, but a jazz night. She doesn't like jazz, disco or soul. She likes traditional rock. There then goes on to be a lovely bit of fun where she prefers Elvis rather than Little Richard. She prefers Eric Clapton to Jimi Hendrix. She prefers Paul Young to Marvin Gaye. And then he pauses at this point, and you can tell that he's clocked what he's saying and the implications of why she likes one and not the other. And then he's like, she prefers the Osmonds to the Jackson 5. She prefers Michael Bolton to Stevie Wonder. And the intonation there suggests that even Alan can't get on board with Michael Bolton over Stevie Wonder. Like, I can't understand it. So in the first quiz of the series, a risque quiz, we ask, who do people really prefer? Are the public as racist as Katrina when it comes to music? So this is worldwide Google Trends over the last 12 months.
Yes.
Who won out of these couplets? Firstly, Elvis versus Little Richard.
Elvis.
Elvis all day.
It's an Elvis landslide. Eric Clapton or Jimi Hendrix?
Ooh, I feel like it's fairly split. Should we go Hendrix?
I think Hendrix.
Okay, let's go Hendrix. Let's go group.
We're going Hendrix.
It's edged by Clapton.
Oof.
Which I was surprised by. Paul Young or Marvin Gaye?
Marvin Gaye. Marvin Gaye? Got it in. He's got to have it in the bag.
It's safely Gaye. The Osmonds or the Jackson 5?
I think it's got to be the Jackson 5.
It's the Jackson 5. And finally, Michael Bolton or Stevie Wonder?
Wonder?
I do like Michael Bolton, but it's got to be Stevie Wonder.
It is Stevie Wonder. So the public, more of a mixed bag than Katrina, who, by Alan's own admission, has some silly bees in her bonnet. And I think then we're off to Leather Without Limits.
Oh, yes. First advert of this series. A lot of fun.
I've got a kind of view on the ads as a whole, which leads into thoughts on Leather Without Limits. I think that the stings generally are either very funny or not very funny. I would actually file this under not very funny. It doesn't make much sense. I didn't think it was particularly funny, and it's fine for it to not make sense. It just needs to be funny. I didn't think it was that funny.
Well, I kind of enjoyed it. If you read it as kind of, you know, Alan is essentially has no choice but to advertise rubbish companies, rubbish products, because they're the only ones that will actually engage with advertising on his podcast in the APU.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it, obviously it's a ridiculous concept, but I did like the way he kind of ties it off with, ask yourself this, could I have this in leather?
Yeah,
it's quite funny.
Yeah.
It's probably a step too far for me to have checked whether there really is a meat processing industrial estate off Junction 9 at the M11, as they referenced in this ad, but I've done it. So it turns out, I also like that it's near the meat processing industrial estate, which suggests that actually there's no real call for Leather Without Limits, but they were already massacring cows nearby, so they might as well try and use the byproduct.
Oh, 100%. That's a huge implied gag, yeah.
So to check the location, there is an industrial estate. There is no meat processing, but I did enjoy that there is a surveillance systems company called Blighter, which I thought was really good fun. And now we're on to Ronald, who knows cheap suits because she's a former teacher.
I don't think we knew that Ronald used to be a teacher. I don't think we know a lot about Ronald, but we've got a little bit more insight there.
Ronald is an Oast House introduction, isn't it?
Yes.
We didn't have Ronald pre-Oast House.
The potholing friend from last series. I'm not sure if he featured before. I don't think so. I like Alan having a dig at teachers here with the cheap suits line. Again, very in keeping with the character. Historically, we know that he's not a fan of his teachers or teachers that he's interacted with in general.
So Katrina, lots of bits to enjoy here. One, that Katrina is having her extension primarily so it can be bigger than Alan's.
But yes.
Very petty and great. And as a result, she's been out at the Boxy Wheat Sheaf with her builder, Garth. There's then a long joke about how Garth is probably called Gareth, but cut corners on the name because he's a contractor, which I quite like.
Yeah.
Summarised with Helen going, whistling ITV theme tunes, the guy's thick. and then seems to get very tied up in whether you can say handicap, but why can you then say golf handicap, as if it's not fairly obvious.
I liked his replay of the conversation with Katrina. Of course, we're bloody exclusive. I took you to Dubai for crying out loud. I thought that really tickled me. And
I've got a note here that says, of course, their ideal holiday destination is Dubai. That is Alan and Katrina through and through.
Yeah, exactly. But the Dubai thing is, for them being exclusive, is very much like, I've had a bath with her, we're now in a serious relationship. Like, he sees these things as milestones that signify that they're in a serious relationship, and now they're exclusive because we've been to Dubai.
Yeah, and I think the implication is Katrina's just going along, you know, he's throwing himself at her, trying to basically buy her courtship, and she wants to go along with it because... What was it? She'll get to drink some booze on the flight. Wasn't that why she was happy to go along anyway? Or in the first class lounge? Can't remember which.
I think it was the lounge.
I think Alan's somewhat unfair here as well. He's assumed exclusivity without ever actually talking about it because of her age and the fact that she's traditional in most other senses. So I think there's an argument that that's not a fair assumption to be making.
What's the... I might have missed this, but sometimes I think it's good to throw to the group because maybe other people also didn't get this. The significance around him being upset about her playing the score from the theme from Howard's Way, is there context to that, or is it just that he likes that song and they've played it together? I know they obviously have listened to it before. He talks about them listening to it when they went to Lake Windermere, but is there more significance to that?
I don't think there's much more to it than that. I think effectively it's that it's another overreach on his part of the, like, he's claiming that song has like monumental significance to the both of them, and that, you know, like, he's in this deep relationship and it's their song, and I think it just doesn't mean that much to her. It's just a song that she likes and will play with anyone that she's banging at the time.
And I think as well, it's just a nice, fun detail. Like, of course, Alan loves Howard's Way. You know, a kind of that sort of kind of almost yuppie aspiring type show that was on air like in the 80s to 90s. Like, it's very fitting of his character to feel almost like an emotional attachment to the theme tune from that show.
Yeah, and continues the theme of him having deep emotional investment and preference for theme songs from TV and film. The theme from Black Beauty, the music from the Bond films, you know, like the way he's, you know, worked ABBA songs into his own theme tune, things
he's
like that.
He's got form with theme tunes, basically,
Definitely, yeah.
Time for probably my favourite bit of this episode, what is and isn't a bit of fun. I really enjoyed this.
Should we go through the list of what is fun?
Yes, please.
I'm happy to kick things off. So, for example, throwing frisbees. That would be fun.
That sign you have in your house that says wine o'clock. That's a bit of fun.
A sign above the Arga that says too glam to give a damn. That's also a bit of fun.
The shopping board that says gin-dependent woman.
The apron that says nobody gets out sober.
Or riding the corkscrew at Alton Towers. All of those things are a bit of fun. And I think we can all agree he's right there.
Yeah. Although I would say, having done a check, that Corkscrew at Alton Towers was only a bit of fun until 2008 when the ride was decommissioned. So he's quite a dated reference there. But what we can all agree on is that kissing and listening to the theme from Howard's Way with Garth is not a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Because with her, it wasn't a corkscrew. It was a cockscrew. Which I can't decide if I find that hilarious or if that's actually just a terrible bit of wordplay. I think it might be both.
I think it's terrible wordplay, but it's really well acted by Coogan here because his voice is kind of cracking at that point. But then he has the sidebar when he says, I made a mental note that I should definitely try stand up.
It's good writing, but it's a bad joke. But it's a bad joke delivered by Alan as opposed to bad writing by the Gibbons.
But we haven't done this before, but I think we should keep a running total of how many times Alan references that he's got to try stand-up. So that's number one for the series so far.
Okay. He attempts a takedown here of Garth, basically detailing a few things that Garth's better at than him. Saying things like, do you honestly think I'm jealous of a builder and that his job is menial work and you end up with sausage-fingered rough hands? And then a line at the end, which Alan delivers to Katrina, which he clearly thinks is devastating, an absolute killer blow. I'm not so sure. Where he says, you may be the village hussy, but I will never be the village idiot or the town crier. Oh, yay. Which, again, it's one of those where it's like, it's not good, is it? But just the delivery and his confidence in it is so high that it just makes it funnier than it is.
Diversion here, when we're on the subject of builders, can you guys remember the names of all three builders from I'm Alan Partridge? Because I wanted to throw this in as a question and I struggled.
Carl,
Ditch, John.
Yeah,
he's John. He's got it.
Okay. Nick Holder. He never forgets a builder.
Yeah.
Lovely Ditch.
I was going to say you win something. You don't win anything.
I don't win anything. I really enjoy as well, this is just a bit of a line that did tickle me, when he was talking about how he wanted to re-woo Katrina, and then also commented it sounds like a province in China, which I thought was great.
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier.
Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So he's got himself a neckerchief, a Solomon Star consultant, which is quite nice because these all tie into some of the promo images around this series of Osthausen. Trainers with a suit. Are you
trainers
sure?
Trainers with a suit.
Yep. And claiming that he was a rock-solid Burton's man, but he now goes to high fashion outlet Ted Baker. Crazy.
Although Ted Baker sounds like a bingo caller who died. That is a brilliant
line. Great.
Yeah,
it's very good.
But yeah, I had this note as well that I think, yeah, because remember when I think particularly the promo shots around Osthausen 2 came out, and it was a bit like, oh, we've got a bit of a new sexy Alan look, and I think this gives a perfect context for why.
I thought the next bit was, the plot line was a bit contrived, that he went round to woo Katrina with using a speech from Jerry Maguire, but choked on rainwater and had the door shut on him.
Well, it's the inhaling a nose full of rainwater, which I kind of enjoy, like him his head going back, rainwater coming in, him making a bit of a tit of himself, and then her just kind of quietly shutting the door and not even acknowledging his presence.
I think you can also bring in the unreliable narrator aspect to this as well, because doesn't Alan essentially live next door to Katrina? So, you know, he's talking about being drenched through, but surely wouldn't be I think he's trying to add a bit of drama and pathos to the events, which probably didn't actually exist.
Yeah, it's a bit of a movie cliche sort of scene,
yes, exactly,
isn't it?
That.
Like, man knocks on the door, soaking wet, and woos his partner to great effect. Whereas what's happened here is he's soaking wet, but he's got a mouthful of rainwater. He's choked, and she hasn't acknowledged him and has just shut the door because she isn't particularly interested in him.
But I'm saying potentially in a. The actuality of the APU, which
of what
make
actually
sense.
Happened, yes.
He's walked five steps in a little bit of spitting rain and...
Yeah, what's actually happened is he's knocked on the door, said something, she's not interested, closed the door, so for dramatic effect, he said that it was soaking wet and he couldn't speak.
But it's okay, because if that tactic's failed, he's about to get some great advice from his new friend Duncan, who he first meets when he calls...
this is brilliant.
Calls Duncan a blind bastard and then realises that he has a blue badge. Duncan lets his tyre down, and then inexplicably they go for a drink together. Is that basically how this plays out?
Yeah, it's very odd, isn't it? But I don't know, with stuff like this, I kind of like it, but I think you could easily criticise it for being a bit too kind of off the wall in a narrative sense, because it makes no real sense. But I like the kind of the idea behind it, that this is how Alan makes friends in his life at this stage, kind of people that he should be befriending. People he's basically rubbed up the wrong way and pissed off and had arguments with, and then it's been like, should we go for a pint?
It happened in Nomad as well. Do you remember? There's a scene in Nomad where he knocks on an old he's in trouble, knocks on an old friend's door. They have a scrap.
Oh, when he invites himself in to stay.
They end up having a scrap, and then they have like a cup of tea together, and then he goes off to sleep in his Buzz Lightyear tent, but. It's a similar story where it doesn't really make any sense that you'd have a fight with someone and then go, do you fancy a cuppa or do you fancy a pint? But in the APU, it makes sense and it's funny. Also, it doesn't need to make sense. It's just a stupid story. Boxed it at a lay-by, called him a... it's just funny.
So he goes for a drink with Duncan, whose advice is to go dark. You need to become Mystery Man. A nod and a smile rather than a chuckle, or make sure she sees you holding two plane tickets. Which I thought, how feasible is that? He's just going around wafting them.
I didn't think about that,
It's also taking Katrina for dinner and giving some money to the waiter to say, hello, sir, will it be the oysters again today?
I really like this plot. It's very convoluted. Yeah, to which Katrina says, you don't eat oysters, which is nice because we can call that back. We know he's got a shellfish allergy from this time, it all makes sense.
And
I hadn't thought about that,
She implies that he's been eating oysters with another man, and then... He does. I love it when he says this. He's like, I don't want to see another man eat oysters, you dirty get.
Every now and then, Pauline Calf. I thought that line felt like a very Pauline Calf line, dirty get.
every now and then you get a dirty get out of Alan, and I'm always happy to see it. And we're now on to another advert, which I mean, if Nick's talked a little bit about the earlier advert not hitting the mark, I imagine your feelings about this one are the other end of the spectrum.
Absolutely. I am in love with splash bathrooms and the bidet.
I would say, we'll get to it, but the last line of this advert is my highlight of the entire episode. Yes.
Before we get to that, I enjoy as well that this is a spot for bathroom product of the week, which is never repeated. So this week it's bidet, next week not mentioned, and then never mentioned again for the rest of the series.
The idea of the bidet becoming the butt of the joke, though, really is brilliant writing.
Nick, could you perhaps talk us through the other plus points of the bathroom product of the week sponsored by Splash Bathrooms?
It can do wonders for anal health. That's what it can do.
The anal health of you and your family.
But can I get a discreet consultation?
I think you can.
I really like them. upping the ick factor by referencing your family, so everybody's now thinking of their own family washing their bumholes.
Are there any benefits though if I buy now?
Is it the free instructional DVD?
Yeah,
presented by Eamon Holmes and his family.
Yeah, they've doubled down on the family there, haven't they? Which is brilliant.
Yeah, the addition of the family. This joke is brilliant, but it also reminded me of when Nicky Campbell was thrown in a river by his family as well. Just the addition of the family, it really does add so much more to the gag.
Also, just take a moment, and really do take a moment here to think about what horrors could lurk within an instructional DVD for a bidet starring Eamon Holmes. I don't think that's anything anybody wants to see.
Big Eames in a bad place, but he has got an impeccable bumhole.
And he's keen for big bidet cash.
So, yeah, an advert that's hard to top or bottom, depending on how you look at it.
Very good. And how then long we're have you had that ready for?
No, straight off the top of the dome, like Bonfunk MCs.
can I jump in with some bidet facts before we move on?
Of course.
Well, actually, I've only got one, and this is thanks to plumworld.co.uk, which, I'll be honest, was the first result on Google when I searched how popular are bidets in the UK. And the answer is, apparently, bidets were quite fashionable during the 70s and 80s, but these days it's rare to see them in the UK. Despite this, they are still very popular overseas, not just in Europe, but around the globe. In fact, a staggering 97% of homes in Italy are fitted with at least one bidet. Now, how is that true? 97% of homes in Italy, I think that is bollocks.
Well, if they're officially called bidets, but most Japanese toilets have very similar bidet-like functions,
futuristic Japanese toilet from the 25th century.
I don't understand why 25th century toilets haven't made their way over to the UK. Keen for Japanese-style toilet in.
I mean, presumably because Eamon Holmes is their ambassador.
I saw a TikTok recently of someone doing a talk about why bidets aren't popular in the UK and how they should be, because if you think about it, if you get your hands dirty, you don't clean your hands with dry paper, you wet it.
Quite right.
You wet your hands and you wash it. So wet wipes are positioned high above the other toilet paper, and it's quite interesting that that's not popular in the UK, because everywhere else, wet wipes and bidets are very popular. And it kind of makes sense. You would wet your hands to dry them, to clean them. So why don't you wet your bum?
In summary,
why do you clean it with a dry piece of paper?
But don't flush wet wipes, because it will add to the fatberg.
Yeah, that is true.
In summary, the UK, get a bidet, get yourself clean.
Yeah,
clean the anus.
So Alan is now on top of Beacon Hill. I wonder if that was a subtle reference to Big Beacon, but possibly not. Might be an overreach. But he's driving Gareth to the hospital, who's somehow broken both his wrists.
You've broken your wrists.
Which puts Alan in a very, it's a very unlikely scenario that Alan actually has literally two upper hands.
Come on, Spider-Man.
Come on. Yeah. He says to Katrina, I thought you were more interested in Action Man. She says, he's no use, he's cut off Garth dead. He's no use to me. I need a man who can use both hands. So that is literally, that's how low the bar is that Alan is now clearing. He's got two functional hands.
But I think obviously the implication is massively, it's about sex talk. Like, Katrina is massively sexually orientated.
And that's why...
Yeah, he's got two hands in order to plop her bum cheeks on the kitchen island.
Exactly that. Which I think brings us to the end of episode one, unless anyone has anything else to add. Or should we dive straight into Carl Laureate?
Yeah, I think chivalry dictates we have to leave the rest to the listener's imagination. So yeah, we should move on.
So episode two, Carl Laureate, clocking at 24 minutes and 1 second. Tom, let us know how Audible have chosen to introduce this episode.
Alan goes head-to-head with some of the biggest hitters in motoring media to secure a plum role.
And we kick off with Alan's favourite word. Does everybody have this list?
Okay, Nick, you start us off.
Glockenspiel.
Words.
Welp.
Yeah, words again.
Am I doing all of them like that?
Elbow.
Throttle.
Keltow.
Pakistani.
Vulva.
Kibosh. I think 10 of Alan's favourite words there.
Yeah, and we didn't make a hash of it, which is good.
Oh, absolutely not. Thanks, Jed.
So, a quick question to the group. As broadcasters and podcasters, words are indeed our currency. So, question to the group, what's everyone's favourite word?
I know mine and I'm happy to go first. I've maintained my favourite word since I was in primary school. It won't change, it shan't change, it can't change. And my favourite word is sponge.
Anyone else got a favourite word?
Oh, I don't know if there's one that's head and shoulders above the rest, but the first that comes to mind is philanthropy.
Ooh, good Ooh. Word.
I mean, I don't think I've ever really thought about this before. I'm going to go for voluptuous.
Oh, nice, sure.
Nice.
Tom Stab, you must have an answer.
Flange.
Flange or blange?
Flange.
Is that a word?
Well, I don't know, just the first thing that came to my mind.
Oh, lovely.
So the first thing, so you asked us what our favourite word was, and the first thing that came to your mind was something that might not be a real word.
Flange is a word.
Blange or flange?
Flange.
Oh, but you said blange.
Yeah.
Flange.
I genuinely thought there was a moment back there where Nick said, my favourite word's always been the same ever since primary school, it's never changed, that it was just going to be Nick.
Yeah, good job you didn't ask my top five.
So, Tom, you're saying blange, not flange, but blange with a B.
Flange.
Can you spell
that
it?
That famous English word.
This is... Flange. This feels like a section where I'm the one saying blange and everyone's laughing at me.
So flanges are used to connect pipes with each other, to valves, to fittings, and to specialty items such as strainers and pressure vessels.
I feel like you've reverse engineered that. I feel like the noise came first and the definition was a lucky lookup.
Help me out, Google.
Yeah. So we've enjoyed all of our favourite words as well as 10 of Alan's. But not all podcasters, according to Alan, respect words as they should. Some treat words with disdain, even on BBC Radio 4. He then goes on to make himself really chuckle at the idea of BBC Radio 14-year-old, which I liked. He's basically laughing at one of the weakest puns we've ever heard, right after blasting everyone else's disdain for words.
Yes.
This is corkscrew again, though, isn't it? This is good writing, but bad Alan writing.
Shortly after that as well, I noticed that he says he has a go on a Rubik cube to calm down.
Yeah.
I thought, isn't it Rubik's? So
yeah,
just another small kind of a word error, but I think that's also drawing in the kind of word scramble, word mash that we get a lot of in Alan in the Oast House.
There's so many in this series as well. There's so many more.
He's much lighter on audience participation here than he is in Mid Morning Matters, but that hasn't stopped us from hearing from Kelly, happily married in Hemel Hempstead, who's having some real fun in the bath from the sounds of it, listening to Alan's words. The payoff at the end is that Kelly's a man and the letter immediately gets scrunched in the bin.
Yeah. I mean, she's kind of written it in a kind of like, I think...
She?
Good point. I've fallen into the same trap Alan did. I think he talks about ASMR in a later episode, but this is kind of an ASMR style of letter where she uses words that he really kind of accentuates and kind of draws out. And then obviously kind of once he's read it out, yeah, he works out that she is in fact he. And then he was once seduced by her words. He's now very much not seduced. And I think he just scrunches it up and throws it in the bin, doesn't he?
And says, for fuck's sake, which really made me laugh as well. And I thought this is great writing. And in a way, not that I necessarily saw the punchline coming, but I wasn't surprised because you could tell how he was getting almost borderline sexually excited the way he was talking through things like the fleshy folds of your mouth swaddle words like lozenge and pleasant. You could see where this was going, so you knew there was going to be some kind of reveal moment. I enjoyed that a lot.
We then have a brief tussle with the Amazon delivery driver who's brought in some stackable stools, but missed the sign that he put at the gates of his home that just said, no deliveries, Partridge recording podcast, which he thought was very clear.
Brilliant.
And then there's a long bit about whether or not the Amazon delivery driver knows the difference between a vegetable bench and a food caddy because he's leaving it on the wrong one.
And I love that you can kind of hear the conversation. So he's like, I'm sorry, I didn't know what it meant about the sign. And I thought you weren't on telly no more. And Alan kind of justifying that he still has a viable career. He says, if you broadcast, you don't have to be on TV all the time. There are other revenue streams and other media. I just thought that was just really fun to kind of hear that interaction.
We get another Audible reference as well, which made me wonder if they have to have one in every episode. I can't remember if I checked for the rest of the series, but that's one per episode so far.
That's where he says, that's where he claims the delivery man didn't know what a podcast was or what terrestrial meant, and then says, I didn't bother mentioning Audible. He'd have been completely flummoxed.
I love that the references to Audible are quite often not in the most positive of terms, and I'm assuming that Audible let these go because this is an absolute cash cow of a product for Audible, so they let these things slide.
Yeah, I'm yet to see an ad or a piece of promotional material for Audible where this isn't one of the first two products that they push. And I think there's one that comes in a later episode, we will come to it, where it basically feels like the writer's just having a direct dig at Audible.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
I'm there for it.
So Alan is Norfolk's first car laureate. We knew this from previous Partridge. Still really enjoy this perversion of poet laureate. Like, you know, car laureate's not a thing, poet laureate is the thing. So effectively it's him using his facility of language to promote cars and car ownership. Really enjoyed his slogan that he created and how quickly it falls apart. Happy to read this one out. So it's cars, better than buses, better than trains, keep your bicycles, keep your planes. Don't have to talk to strangers, on your own, choose your sounds, everyone else fuck off.
That's the message.
Did you notice he then goes off on a bit of a diatribe about a cyclist here? And he says he's happy for cyclists to ride the country lanes between my houses, plural, which I thought was interesting.
I don't know
what the significance of that really is, or whether it's him in terms of houses in a more objective sense, perhaps. Don't know.
I'm not sure. I like the theory that he's got more than one. I also enjoy where he's talking about motorists and cyclists, that he set out his stall at the beginning of this bit, that it's very much, you know, he's in the spirit of collaboration, in the spirit of being good-natured, about sharing the road, but then everything that he goes on to say undermines that, starting with, we'll listen to their concerns. So already suggesting that the car owner is the default and that the cyclist is the sort of alternative. Yeah. He's happy to allow them to cycle near his homes between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. every day, as long as they're in single file, so I don't have to ride behind them at 12 miles an hour for 12 miles, because that takes an hour. At this point, I was thinking, I think this is an Alan Yes Coogan yes.
Yes, 100%. I think he's definitely got something against the cycling community, because they've come up before talking about Lycra, you know, looking like fat superheroes. Mm-hmm. I really like the point he makes, which is kind of, you know, sometimes when he makes a point, you're kind of like, oh, yeah. I can see where you're coming from, where he talks about, like, if Brompton cyclists can cycle in normal clothes, why can't cyclists, why do they have to, you know, be dressed in this absolutely ludicrous getup?
Oh, Nick, as a cyclist, could you answer that?
Good point, good question.
Well, I don't go in for the full... I don't like to dress like a cunt, basically. Let's put it that way.
but Nick, let me read Alan's words here. Highly fitting clothing on men over 50 is not nice for anyone, and some find it upsetting. My addendum to that is they don't need to be over 50. I've seen Nick come to the park after cycling there, and traumatising is all I can say.
I am under 50. I'd like to make that clear. Although by the time we get through Partridge and finally get to Saxondale, I might be knocking on the door of 50. But right now, I am under 50.
I mean, to play devil's advocate in terms of cyclists, surely the cyclists that are wearing Lycra generally on the reg are doing it because they do it for long stints at the weekends and want to, you know, and you need to dress comfortably and appropriately, quick dry clothing, etc., for a long ride. I do think people who are wearing it just to commute 10 minutes down the road to work, then I feel like Steve / Alan has a point here. But yeah, did enjoy when Alan says, you know, if cyclists attend meetings, please, please dress normally. You'll see very little difference in performance. You won't pee people off and you won't have to dress like a cunt.
Well, what do we think of the use of the C-bomb here? I mean, for me, I always find it funny when he uses that because I think...
Oh, definitely.
It always feels a little bit unexpected and therefore quite arresting when he says it. But I don't know. I think that you could also argue, you know, there is a lot of strong language, and does Alan as a character need that to be funny?
I think there are words and phrases that take you out of Alan and put you into Steve. And I think the word cunt, dirty get... and there are probably others that will spring to mind. Actually, he just snaps into Steve for a momentary second, and it's not really Alan's language. He wouldn't use that. Whereas Coogan, it might not actually be Steve, but he kind of like snaps out of Alan momentarily, and it's this hybrid of, is it Steve? Is it Alan? Who knows? But I think there's something in that.
Yeah,
I'd agree. We're on to an advert. I would imagine another one that it falls into Nick's category of not exactly hitting the mark. Advertising Fresh Fish, the Shipshape Fish Shop. I mean, it's basically just a joke about how difficult it is to say Shipshape Fish Shop.
Yeah,
in Sheringham. Don't forget where it is. Yeah.
There's not much to say on this one, really. I don't think it's fine. It's funny. It's funny when you hear it, but there's not much to kind of dig into, and it's okay.
And so
I'd agree.
Suffolk is looking for a car laureate because, as Tom Stab said in his intro, Quentin Wilson doesn't want to do it anymore because his wife doesn't want him to do it anymore.
Really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's really good.
I have to admit, I wasn't particularly familiar with Quentin Wilson, so just for anyone else in the same boat, he's an English television presenter and producer, motoring journalist, author and former car dealer. He was a presenter of Britain's Worst Driver, Fifth Gear and the original incarnation of Top Gear. A notable, I thought, his children are called Minnie and Max.
Great.
Nice.
So I think this got this Suffolk vacancy got Alan thinking about the prospect of a super county conglomerate, an East of England car laureate. And so, yeah, he said, you know, people talk about the West, but what about Scarborough, Margate, Dover, Southend? No, not Southend. not sure what Southend. Did anybody have the list of celebrities that want to put their hat in the ring for the East of England car laureate job?
Yep, I've got that. Inverdell wants it. Charles wants it. Bacon wants it. Burke wants it. Bruce, Fiona wants it because she wants a fifth revenue stream.
Yeah.
But who are the front runners?
Yeah, but it's between Alan and Vicky Butler Henderson. Someone who I wasn't...
Vic Butt Hen?
Yeah, someone I wasn't overly familiar with.
No, I had to look up as well. So, Victoria Gemma Butler Henderson, born 16th of February 1972, is a British racing driver, former presenter of Top Gear, and current presenter of Fifth Gear.
Copied and pasted from Wikipedia there, Adam. Same as in my notes.
That's right.
Great job.
Speaking of copying and pasting, they then go on to make exactly the same joke about slow hand clapping a woman parallel parking that they've made in previous Partridge. Still raised a chuckle, but, you know, you got to... understand that it is a recycled chuckle at this point.
So a question on that, because I mean, I'm sure we all clocked that is, you know, it is literally pretty much verbatim delivery from, it was this time, series one, episode five, I think. What do we make of that? Is it good because it's just doubling down on character traits and consistency? Is it bad because it's lazy and just rehashing, or is it something else entirely? I'm a bit unsure what to make of it personally.
I think it all comes down to the proportion. I think if 1% of Osterhaus content is funny jokes mentioned again because they're in context, happy to let that slide. I think they could have done something here where they made a joke that acknowledged that first joke but wasn't the same thing, and that would have been better. Mm. But I think ultimately it's a lot of content, and I think it's nice to have those things that weave it together. And I mean, ultimately, it's what would be true of Alan. I'm sure we've all got stories that we've told more than once when the situation, you know, we've all got a joke or a tale where we're waiting for the situation to come up where it's appropriate to make it. So why can't Alan?
True. Although I do think it's kind of that weird thing in terms of when you have kind of this verbatim repetition again, it doesn't really add anything to the episode though, because it's not like it's an essential plot point or driving narrative anywhere. It's just a rehashing of a line because it's about driving. So yeah,
it is a bit strange. Sure. I mean, it slightly takes you out of it because you've heard it before, and you're quite conscious of that. I think it's hard to explain why they would do it. I can't really see any benefits for it. It's not really a problem, but it is odd given they clearly don't suffer with being prolific with the writing of the character. Like, look at the output. So it's a bit odd, and I think a little bit inexplicable. But yeah, it kind of is what it is. I do enjoy his reluctance around kind of a woman being eligible for the vote in the Carl Laureate with that thing. Things have to change, not because he wants them to, not because it's a good thing, just a kind of reluctance that it has to change.
Really enjoyed his justification of his own odds, saying that he comes from the male side of things. So again, already mealy-mouthed about the whole thing. But women don't find me predatory or threatening, and as a man, you can't do much better than that. The bar is so low, literally. Unless you're predatory or threatening, you're basically in it to win it.
Yeah, very much positioning himself as the unity candidate. I love that idea, and his justifications you've just outlined is just such a low bar.
There's kind of an Iron Man and Partridge revisit at this point, yes, where he talks about he's effectively running for public office, and thinks about the closest he's ever come to an election campaign is when he was campaigning for Fernando and Denise to come and spend Christmas at the Travel Tavern in their 20s. I mean, surely you're fighting a losing battle from the get-go. If that's your gambit, come and spend Christmas with me in a single room at a Travel Tavern.
It's so bleak what he ended up doing as well. Individually, I think all of the things he sort of talks about are good things, but when strung together on Christmas Day, they become incredibly bleak. It's like The Terminator, brilliant film, love it. A Wolves Viennetta, happy to eat it, there's a time and a place. A shoehorn, functional, practical, it serves a job. What I don't want to be doing, however, is be in a hotel room on my own watching The Terminator and eating Wolves Viennetta with a shoehorn. It doesn't work.
On Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day.
I think that was the worst day of my life.
Yeah.
So fresh from talking about his abilities to run an election campaign, although he did lose that one. Alan also talks a little bit about his history of campaigning, which I enjoyed. He's done two notable things in his campaigning life. One was getting a care worker sacked for feeding a pensioner mouldy yoghurt. And the other was to get the council to honour the dead horses from the war, although it does become obvious that he prioritised this pony memorial over all the people from the colonies who also died.
I just love it as well. It's a big bronze pony. It's like all the horses. Like, I'm pretty sure a pony is like a young horse, so it's like it just doesn't make any sense. And I'm just visualizing a big bronze pony.
So his campaign is well underway. He's already done the rounds at all the leading dealerships, shaking sweaty hands and talking to salesmen almost all called Danny. And he's also pitching some potential car names, which I've really enjoyed.
So good. These are brilliant cars.
Go for it.
Have you got the list, Nick?
Keen to kick things off, and happy to report that I would drive the Ford Dignity.
I'd be less happy to drive the Fiat Avalanche.
I think I'd be even less inclined to drive the Honda Inuit.
Although he's not sure about that one, to be fair.
Well, I'm definitely not keen on the Vauxhall Vince.
I actually could see you driving a Vauxhall Vince. Was that Tom Dark in a Vauxhall Vince? Yes, I think it was.
With his name on the side, Tom Dark drives this Vince. Love that sound.
Better than Cogpiss Partridge, so yeah.
And we round things off with the Ford Ambition, which actually sounds like it could be a car.
That sounds quite plausible. That's...
I've got that note. It actually sounds... I think it's actually quite a good car name.
Yeah.
But with that in mind, this is now my part of the show where I introduce a game, and it's time for the game that I've devised called Drive By or Drive Lie. And these are 10 car make and models, and are they real and are they fake?
Excellent. Can I just say, I'm glad you did this, Tom, because I put this in my notes to make a game of this nature and didn't have the time. So this has all worked out perfectly. Right.
So yeah, this is Drive By or Drive Lie. I've got 10 car make and models and a group consensus. Are they real or are they fake? Jed, perhaps you can drop in the Top Gear theme tune as the sound bed here while I go through these. Play along at home if you're listening. Number one, the Chevrolet Goblin.
I reckon yes.
So that's a drive-by.
That's a drive-by. You go for drive-by. It's fake. It's not real. Uh-huh. The Chevrolet Goblin is made up. Next up is the Daihatsu Fanny, and it's F-A-N-E, so Fanny.
Mm. Funny hair.
Should we say yes?
Let's say yes.
Okay, drive by.
Could be an international model not used in the UK.
It's a drive lie. That is fake. I made that up. Oh. Number three. 0 out of 2 so far. Not very good. The Mitsubishi Charisma.
It sounds plausible.
Mm. Let's keep the positivity going and say yes.
Drive by.
That is a drive by. That is real.
Right, that's
Mitsubishi
one,
Charisma
one.
Is real.
I feel like I could have used the context of the Mitsubishi Charisma on parts 1 and 2 of this quiz and would have made it much clearer which was real.
The Volkswagen Thing.
Thing.
Is this
Blanche all over again? Blanche.
The Volkswagen Thing.
I'm saying no.
No, get out.
Hey, yeah.
The Volkswagen Thing is real.
What?
Be real.
Is this like when Spotify tried to bring out the car thing?
Yeah. What happened to the car thing? Anyway, next up, number 5, the Ford Climax.
I think that is real. I don't know why.
I think that's a real one.
Happy to go with drive-by.
That is a drive lie. I made that up as well.
Oh,
you're doing
God's
shocking
sake.
Here.
Are these
you
all made up?
You got one.
Number 6. The Mitsubishi Lettuce.
No,
can't be.
Or
no
is
chance.
It so ridiculous it's true?
Well, wasn't the last Mitsubishi real? So I think this
one
is unlikely
and
to
the,
follow.
And the lettuce, introducing the lettuce. It's a,
just
it's
driving
a drive
my lettuce around the block.
The Mitsubishi Lettuce is real.
What?
What? No, right.
I'm going to have to Google
right,
that.
Screen share immediately. I don't believe you. What?
Wow.
Google it.
Oh my God. It is. And it kind of looks like, you know, the car that Homer designs? It's kind of like that. But on a diet. It's like a diet Homer.
Yeah, the Mitsubishi Lettuce is real. Number 7, the Peugeot 69.
Drive.
Drive lie.
Lie. Ooh. Okay. We'll go with the team, so drive lie.
That is a drive lie. I made that up.
You dirty get.
Is that 2 points?
That's 2 points. Yeah. 3 left. Renault Le Car.
Renault Le Car.
Which translates as Renault the car.
Oh. I don't know what to think anymore after this.
No.
Should we say lie?
I'm going to say lie just because I
it's
can't.
It's lie.
I can't drive lie. Think it's real.
Renault Le Car is real.
What?
What?
We've done terribly.
Yep. 2 more.
Well, I think it's all these car manufacturers that have done terribly by making literally unbelievable product names.
The Isuzu Mysterious Utility Wizard.
True?
At this point, it's real, isn't it?
I'm saying real. Why not?
It is real. Yeah. It is real.
Yes, get in.
The clue there was to stumble over the first brand name.
Yeah.
Why would you put in a brand name you couldn't say unless it was real?
Whoa, mysterious utility vehicle.
And finally, to round this terrible quiz off, the Vauxhall Adam.
Adam!
I'd drive
beep,
it.
Beep, beep. I want it to be true, so I'm going to say true.
Okay, I'll go true.
I believe in myself.
Going drive
I'm
by.
Saying true.
It is a drive-by.
Yeah.
The Vauxhall Adam is real, although it has been discontinued.
Due to staggering lack of demand.
Yep.
Is that 4 out of
4 10? 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
Terrible.
40%.
Lovely. So, if Ford won't make the ambition, which I think is Alan's best idea, because it goes like shit on a shovel, but it is a van, then he'll take it to Vauxhall. If not, he'll take it to Renault. Very much the take it to Sky of this series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also later on, if Audible won't have it, Spotify will have it.
I've got a couple of miscellaneous notes here. Basically, he describes Jeremy Clarkson as showing it's possible to farm irreverently, and also describing Mark Zuckerberg as scruff pot in chief, apropos of nothing, really.
Yeah. I think I had that he says Clarkson is my kind of farmer.
Another advert at this point, which again, I think misses the mark
Not
a little
good.
Bit. The parish church yeah. looking for a new bell ringer. I've just got a note saying it's a bit of a waste, this bit.
Yeah, I'd agree. It just, there was nothing particularly funny about this at all. And even the other ones that haven't been great, at least there's some kind of like wordplay or kind of like there's word noises that are the joke. Whereas this, just seemed pointless, I would agree. And by the way, the note I had before that is nasal hair plucking. Just a quick question to the group. Are we nasal hair pluckers, yes or no?
Absolutely not.
Not pluckers, so no.
Not pluckers.
I think it's well known within our group that we all treat a serious outbreak of nasal hair.
The scourge that is.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
The fight
yeah.
that cannot be won.
But trimming as opposed to plucking.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let a machine deal with that havoc rather than try and tackle it mano a mano.
Smells Good. Like bracken.
Well, I'm glad we sorted that out.
So he hits out again at pedestrianised town centres. There's a nice callback to Norwich at this point. And he's once again going after Lycra. And it's time to notch another notch in the should at least try stand up bedpost. So that's two mentions so far in the series of Alan.
Two for
two. He should try stand up. And then there's a nice bit about car puns here. Where he's got a nice run of them, but then he gets overexcited and claims that somebody at the conference he's at has come with an escort.
I think the puns go, good to see Vauxhall on to Cavalier, this guy's come with an escort, and then you've got they use sex worker and Vauxhall prostitute.
Yeah, he's gone off the deep end.
He's gone too far.
Also, even when the puns were about actual car brands, they were all brands that are at least 30 years old or discontinued.
Great.
And then there's the next advert, I think.
I'm again, really ahead in my notes.
Yeah, it's largely a straightforward ad, but I just think it's worth it for the discount code, isn't it, basically?
So that's the joke, isn't it?
Hello, fellas. Yeah, Alan Partridge here. He's suggesting online counselling.
You could although... do it where... I just like the idea that you can do it in a car park. That kind of makes sense. But like a train toilet, as if you'd have counselling in a train toilet.
Oh, so he goes around the houses, doesn't he? And look, like he lists lots of places, but they're all either lay-bys, toilets, or car parks. There are no other options. But don't worry, guys. For 50% off, just use the code OastHouseMental.
Yeah, that's a great payoff. The discount code, and I thought, you know, this is a very good kind of mockery of, I think, probably like the BetterHelp ads, which are one of the biggest podcast advertising spends out there. So, yeah, I think, you know, that's very much who the ad is targeting at the same time. But a lot of fun with the discount code.
We should put our ad break for this episode here just in case we can get that exact advert to run. Wouldn't that be fun? So off the back of the advert, the car laureate has been chosen. But before that, let's talk about PG Tips for some bizarre reason. He says, PG Tips used to use chimpanzees. It sounds barbaric now. But they used to put peanut butter in their mouths to make it look like they were talking. Very clever. Did anybody else check if this was true? Whether that they actually put peanut butter in the chimps' mouths for PG Tips?
I'd heard that somewhere before. I can't remember where, but I definitely heard that that's how they did
it. So I would say a moderate amount of Googling revealed that it's confirmed that this is a widespread rumor, but right. it's not confirmed. I couldn't find anywhere that could prove or substantiate it. So this podcast right. isn't the first place that people have said that's true, but no one has proven it as far as I can find.
Okay, they did still dress them up in clothes, though, and make them pour tea and pretend to be people.
Oh, yeah, that's beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, that, exactly. We have the evidence. PG Tips have supplied the advert-based evidence.
Before we get to the phone call where they reveal who is the new laureate, you had the Quentin Wilson voice note that Alan sent to all the dealerships as part of the campaigning. And I did wonder, is that really him? I think it might be.
Oh, really?
I don't think it sounds like him.
I wonder.
It's hard to know. Is it because they obviously have a voice actor playing Schnapsy, because that obviously isn't Schnapsy. So I part of me wonders why they almost would, and it'd be better to have a voice actor. But in short, do not know. Entirely
but
possible.
But then it's a fun Easter egg if, you know, it's kind of like really an extra layer to the joke if they have got Quentin Wilson.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. Yeah. It's been a little while since I listened to this episode, but is it not possible it's Steve Coogan doing an impression? It is what he does.
I'm highly pretty likely. Confident it's not Coogan.
Okay. So yes, Clive Copeland, the car czar, will appoint the laureate. There's another word mangle from Coogan, or from Alan, sorry, as he describes it as being for the east of England. And he's very gracious about it. I did think this whole bit was a really nice bait and switch. You know, you really think it's going one way before it goes the other. He's very gracious about his competitor at this point, where he clearly thinks he's going to be given it. Eamon Holmes has been on the phone, presumably fresh from the B-Day, saying, you get it, you can make some great changes.
People in the boardroom, the worker on the shop floor, you know, the everyman.
Oh, yeah, and a great bit about him asking questions, being on the shop floor asking, did you see the match last night? And then, how long has this man been on a break?
So the reveal of the call, which, plot spoiler, they've gone with Idris Elba. For me, this was the first genuine laugh-out-loud moment of the series. I thought the rug pull and misdirection of this was absolutely perfect because, you know, he'd mentioned Vicky Butler Henderson being kind of in the frame for it, and other celebrity names as well. The fact that Idris was never even mentioned in any of the discussion of his competition, I just thought it was so brilliantly done. I laughed out loud so much when they did this.
Great, it's so good, great writing. Isn't it? And the way they sort of make you fill in the gaps, you know, he's on the phone to Clive and he's just going right, getting more and more distressed, but also saying things like congratulating them on it being a progressive move, which is why you think he's gone to Vicky. And I think, I can't remember it exactly where, but there's definitely been previous examples of something like this where we're given a premise by Alan that runs for a while, and then at the end, we discover that actually none of the assumptions he's made are true. And actually, you know, the truth is wildly out of whack with what you've been told, just like this, which is great. And then as someone who used to work for a record label that released a lot of instrumental music, the song at the end of this episode I thought was a lot of fun as well, where he's basically, I guess it ties into the car laureate, you know, the value of words theme of the episode, where he's just name-checking people who are known for making instrumental music and saying, why couldn't you bung a chorus in?
Just to go back to the car laureate thing quickly before the words song, is I thought it was also a very classic Alan trope that, you know, that this East of England car laureate role was his idea and he still didn't get it. You know, that's such a thing that would happen to Alan, isn't it? It's like, you know, he went and he seems to have been quite happy that multiple other celebrities were applying for something that was his idea. The fact he could just take ownership of it and say, I've got an idea and I'm going to do it, I thought was quite consistent for, I guess, the luck of Alan more than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yes, that brings us to the end of Car Laureate and the end of today's episode of Monkey Tennis, unless anyone has anything else.
I had one more thing about the song. I just thought the list of artists in this was just didn't really chime as it being right for Alan, the character, particularly referencing things like Krugbin and Aphex Twin and Orbital. I just thought, would Alan really know who those are?
I think
I just thought that was a bit odd.
I think that's fair. I think I think there's an argument that he might have started the song with the people he knew and then Wikipedia'd instrumental artists.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. It feels a bit like hearing the words Aphex Twin that... come out of his mouth doesn't feel right.
It's one of those things that took me a bit out of the episode, and it felt a bit like, had Stephen the Gibbons just written this and recorded it and plonked it on the end of the episode so he didn't want it to go to waste? Because it doesn't really tie that well. I thought this was an oddity for me.
Yep, entirely fair. So, that's the end of today's episode. Join us next week when we'll be talking all about Alan's sort of return to Hospital Radio. If any of you have got thoughts on Oast House or the episodes we covered today, get in touch. Instagram at Monkey Tennis Pod, Twitter at The Partridge Pod, Facebook.com/The Partridge Pod, or email thepartridgepod@gmail.com. We haven't mentioned it much because we're humble guys and we're not interested in money, but if you enjoy what you're listening to, we do make this for free, and we would love you to chuck a couple of pounds our way, ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. Until next week, from all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, thanks and goodbye.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Aha!
Yep, absolutely.
Monkey Tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I have the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey Tennis?
Little pierce my foot on the spine.
With a chuckle.
Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey Tennis?
Okay.
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey Tennis?
Edmunds is a total wazzock of a guy.
Yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Monkey Tennis?
Back of the net.
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.